We have a very exciting guest for you tonight. His name is David Wilcock, and we'll be pondering all sorts of deep questions as to the nature of reality and the nature of the universe. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He has a great website called DivineCosmos.com. He's written a book called The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and he's brought forward a lot of evidence that he is indeed the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and we'll be directing you to the site to see his picture, and you can compare for yourself tonight. It's going to be really amazing. And he has a new film out about group consciousness called Convergence. Welcome to the show, David Wilcock.
Mike, it's a pleasure to be here, and I thank you for inviting me on.
Thank you so much. Okay, we're going to dig right into some of these topics tonight. Now, a lot of us feel that, you know, we're individuals, we have free will and the private mind and private thoughts, but you want to talk about the law of oneness and some group consciousness. Why don't you talk a bit about that for starters?
Well, from a philosophical perspective, ancient mystics have often said that we are interconnected more than just bodies that are separated from each other by the air, that there's some sort of energetic field, if you will, that connects us together. And various ancient traditions have had different names for it. The Indians called it prana. In China, they call it qi or ki. The Tibetans have a special name for it. It goes through almost every ancient civilization has some sort of message about this oneness. So what happened was the Law of One series, which you've kind of suggested in your question, was a series of material that was channeled in 1981. Now, normally, up until that point in my research, I had not taken channeling seriously, but I had 3 years of research of ancient civilizations and UFOs and so forth under my belt. And when I found this material, it tied in so many of the topics that I thought I had independently discovered on my own that I realized that there was some sort of genuineness going on here. So oneness is actually a philosophy that has a physics background. Another aspect of your question is how we can prove oneness in a sense of actual science. And that's where we tie into the movie and all this other stuff.
Okay, great. So why don't you sort of lay out the philosophy of how the law of oneness works in our daily lives?
Well, that's, again, a very broad question which has several layers of meaning. On the most metaphysical and spiritual level, oneness actually does mean that the physical body itself is but a projection of spirit, and in that ultimate sense is illusory, for we are all actual distortions of intelligent light, which is actually a unified consciousness. Now, on a more physical level, it appears that the earth is a school that has a particular purpose in mind for everybody who lives on it, and that purpose is the evolution of consciousness. Most of the people on this planet are here to learn a very simple lesson at this stage, which is basically to love and support others rather than manipulate and control them. And what we now are seeing in laboratory research is that the consciousness field is directly interfacing with DNA, so that when a person feels love, this is proven by Dr. Glenn Ryan, their DNA actually unwinds and expands. And if a person is feeling hatred and anger, their DNA contracts and shrivels up. So what we now have is a biological, scientifically measurable marker to prove that love is the operative quality of this consciousness field that interconnects us.
That is amazing. So you talk a bit in your articles I've been reading about the law of service to others. Is that the ultimate lesson where we're supposed to be serving other human beings?
Actually, when you get really deep into esoteric metaphysics, service to others is also a distorted path because it frames it as the positive path is service to others, the negative path is service to self. It's when you get up through higher levels of learning, what would be called sixth density, where service to self and service to others have to merge, and you have to balance your shadow side with your good side, as we would normally think of the term good. So at this stage of evolution, it is very important that we learn service to others and that become our primary focus. This ascension that I write about on my website, which we can go into a lot more detail in our 2012 discussion, appears to be sort of a reward for people who have graduated from the basic curriculum that the Earth is here to teach us, which is to be loving and supportive. So it... Hello?
Yeah, we're still here. Go ahead.
Okay, I heard a beep. That's all.
That's
maybe
all.
That's our CIA friends listening in on our conversation.
All right, well, come on in. All right. So anyway,
it's
you were
funny because I've met people from Black Ops, and I've heard on the inside more than one person tell me that they're dazzled with how I came up with all this stuff, and they don't know how I did it. I had a
Absolutely.
Black Ops guy at one of my conferences say, well, you're 85% correct, and proceed to tell me the other 15.
You're talking about ascension and this whole concept about it might be a group reward.
That's correct. So the idea here is imagine that you're born with wealthy grandparents, let's say, and you go through your whole life and you never knew that you had this huge inheritance waiting for you. And then all of a sudden, bam, you discover that you've been propelled into a life unlike anything you could have imagined as a result of this inheritance. Well, the Earth appears to be ruled by cause and effect and simple Darwinian evolution where, you know, random mutations have created us to be where we are now, and that's old world thinking. The new world thinking is much more in line with systems theory, complexity, chaos theory, consciousness as a unified field in which the human body itself is an interface with some sort of cosmic consciousness that's much bigger than we are. And in that sense, we share an identity with the Earth, with the Sun, with the galaxy, and we're all energetically interconnected. In fact, Dr. James Spottiswood came out with a study showing that he took 20 years worth of ESP research and looked for a universal factor in time of how people's ESP worked. And what he found was that if you measure sidereal time, which is the position of the Earth to the center of the galaxy, then when your position on the Earth is aiming you at the center of the galaxy, you have a 400% higher rate of ESP ability. So this is really showing how, if you can imagine the center of the galaxy sort of like a hairdryer, and it's blowing this hot air at you, and your position on the Earth is only going to rotate you in front of that hot air once every 24 hours. And when it does, your ESP is 400% more effective. Well, if somebody wants to find out when that is, you can look up sidereal time on the Internet and look for 14 hours and 30 minutes of your local sidereal time. And that's when your psychic ability will be the strongest because you're in alignment with the galactic energy. So this is very measurable. I mean, this is scientific, hard science. So, again, it's like we are standing on the renaissance of consciousness and science as we know it, and what it really does is it strips away much of the veneer that has kept us from seeing our own divinity. And there do appear to be control groups in power on this planet whose specific objective is to try to keep people in fear, and they don't want this kind of information getting out because it leads to people losing that fear very quickly once they realize the implications of what all this science is about.
Right. Let's talk briefly about this group. Some people call it the Illuminati. They're kind of working toward this new world order, this global government. Can you tell us a little bit about what they're up to and their objective?
Well, I've actually had a personal conversation over email and a little bit on the telephone with a woman who was in the Illuminati, who calls herself Savali. She has a lot of material on the Internet. She's gone out of contact. She may have been assassinated. I don't know. Nobody's heard from her in about a year now.
Right.
But she survived the group and basically described something that's very highly organized, like a multi-level marketing corporation, for example. And this is a situation where you have essentially European banking families who then migrated to the U.S. beginning in Pittsburgh to sort of offset the American Revolution, which was actually an anti-Illuminati revolution in the first place. So the Illuminati got here shortly after. They set up in Pittsburgh, and their western center is in San Diego. And they basically believe in a Luciferian philosophy in the sense that they inherited ancient mystery school wisdom and then were persecuted by Christians and came to the conclusion that whoever the Christians said was thrown out of heaven must have been the good guy because of how people were persecuting them in the name of Christianity. So that in turn led to the refuting of Christian dogma and the embracing of what they felt Luciferian philosophy meant. So then there was a melding of Luciferian doctrine, basically the idea of, the wisdom and science and so forth, with ancient mystery school traditions that primarily trace back to Egypt. And this is where the path gets really complex, in the sense that the Law of One series in 1981 is a source that claims to be Ra, claims to be this extraterrestrial group that was in touch with the ancient civilization we'd call Atlantis and actually provided them with philosophical as well as technological assistance, including the fabrication of the Great Pyramid as it now stands. So what this leads to is, if you look at the Edgar Cayce material, which you mentioned at the beginning, his past life allegedly was Ra-Ta, which is the Atlantean priest who interfaced with this extraterrestrial group so as to engender these social advances, including the knowledge of pyramid technology, the global grid, anti-gravity technology, time travel technology. All these things were being shared with humanity back then. And then what happened was this priest, Ra-Ta, basically got corrupted by his own shortcomings. The danger that you always run into when you try to do a mission like this for the planet is being corrupted by your own shadow side and your own natural proclivity towards feeling separated and therefore indulging in behaviors that are not healthy. So his problem, So his problem was being essentially polygamous and wanting to have multiple wives. And apparently, because he refuted his own doctrine about monogamy, that was sufficient karmic load to force him to have to go through a series of reincarnations, which would not have distortions towards power anywhere near to the degree that he had in that lifetime. And that was apparently Edgar Cayce. And then when you start dovetailing the astonishing physical resemblance between my face and Edgar Cayce's face, and the fact that I was born in the only time in 127 years after Cayce's death where the birth planets in the astrology sense line up almost one for one all across the chart. I mean, it's literally like billions to one against chance that this could be coincidence.
Right. So, I think it's time to direct people to your website, to divinecosmos.com. Everybody go, because I know you're all on the computer, because that's how you're listening. Go to divinecosmos.com. It says start here. I want you to click that tab and go down to articles and find the article on Edgar Cayce, and then you will see a black and white photo of Edgar and then the photo of David Wilcock and compare the two for yourself. It's absolutely mind-blowing. So I want to remind all of our listeners there's many, many books and articles for free at divinecosmos.com, and you can read much more from David Wilcock. So let's get into kind of the history of humanity on this planet. My understanding is that there's three cycles of 25,000 years. Why don't you talk about the whole history of human beings on this planet?
Okay, well, in order to do that, we should widen the aperture a little bit about this group that we were talking about, Ra, because what they did with the Atlanteans, if you can imagine that, we're talking 11,000 years ago, that's very recent history in terms of what they've been doing. When you get into this Law of One series, which, again, has multiplexed itself through so many scientific areas which were able to be validated upon later analysis, that my conclusion is that we're dealing with an actual galactic history. So when you really dig into that material, what you find out is that humanity on this planet is an aggregate of civilizations that did not ascend on their own native planets. In fact, it appears that we have some 13 different civilizations that have been blended together. Now, what that means is this. The galaxy itself, in Law of One philosophy, is a sentient organism which has a series of archetypal experiences that it sets up that we have to go through. There's a total of 22, 21 of which are divided into three sets of seven. You have seven body archetypes, seven mind archetypes, and seven spirit archetypes. And these represent natural journeys that we go through in balancing body, mind, and spirit, essentially. So each planet is given a certain set length of time in order for the entities on that planet to learn the basic lessons of loving and supporting others, which is what third density is all about, like this Earth is now. And after three cycles of 25,000, 26,000 years, if you haven't gotten it together by that point, if you're still kind of confused about whether you manipulate people or love them, then you basically have to recycle and move to another third-density planet.
Okay.
So Ra is apparently a group within a larger group called the Confederation of Planets in Service of the One Infinite Creator, or the Confederation for short, and this consists of some 53 different civilizations spread out over more than 200 planets, much more evolved than we are now, and they have worked together to basically manage and transfer planetary populations. That's their primary role. So they actually shuttle people from one planet to another when these recyclings happen. So what occurred was the Confederation apparently had a number of planets in which the groups of people on those planets were very small in number, not enough to warrant terraforming a whole new planet just for them. So they said, wow, we got this great idea. Why don't we take all these different groups of people and we'll put them all together on one planet, and won't they all be so happy?
It didn't quite work out that way, did it?
No, it didn't. And so, again, we have three cycles of 25,000 years. The typical estimate is after the first cycle that 15 to 25% of the people graduate from the planet. At the end of the second cycle, you get 60% or more of the population graduating. And if even anybody is left at the end of the third cycle, then you pretty much mop up and finish at the end of that. Well, in this case, on Earth,
what happened in our case, right?
Nobody graduated at the end of the first cycle.
Zero.
Only
okay.
150 people were ready to graduate at the end of the second cycle. And those are referred to as the elders, and they became immortal beings, such as St. Francis of Assisi and St. Germain, as another example. A lot of people have heard of that.
That makes sense, sure.
So in addition, and that's where a lot of these ancient legends come from, but in addition to that, the ETs themselves in the sixth-dimensional and fifth-dimensional level were now karmically responsible for having made a bad judgment call in terms of throwing all these people together on this planet, because, in essence, their different planetary origins led to different appearances of their physical bodies that we would call races. Mm-hmm. So as a result of that, it's very, very rare that entities would normally evolve on a planet and have such different racial characteristics as we do. That's not normal. That's one of the things that makes our planet so unique in this galaxy.
Okay.
And actually, most of the internecine warfare that we've had between civilizations have been over race and over people looking different. So it's a result of that imbalance and the wars that have been created in the name of God, whatever people see God as being, that these beings 25,000 years ago had to volunteer as a collective to begin taking on human incarnation, forgetting who they are, forgetting where they came from, and volunteering to basically be an alien anthropologist, parachute down into the jungle, and basically play gorillas in the mist.
Right.
Most
now
of your listeners are these people.
Right. Now, you're saying we're at the end of the third cycle of 25,000 years, correct?
Correct. Right. Okay. So 2012 is it. I mean, according to the Law of One philosophy and many other traditions, we are at the end of the whole game, which means that everybody is here to try to get it together now, and the decisions that you make in this life reverberate through all of your other incarnations. So this is a very heavy time to be here, and again, I want to stress the fact that most of your listeners will be in this category of what we call ET Wanderer, meaning that they have not fit in all their lives. They've been a lot more sensitive, perhaps naive. And as a result of that, they have grown up feeling isolated and ostracized and not understanding negativity and being, in a sense, very naive, because genuinely negative people can be quite manipulative towards them and they won't understand it.
Yeah, it's like
so they're the
thrown
people
into a blender, you know.
Yeah.
It feels like being thrown into a blender. Like, we don't even understand crime, like why you would steal a car or kill a person.
Exactly right.
It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and I found out about all this in the first place back in 1992, when I found a book called From Elsewhere by Dr. Scott Manilker. I'd already been researching this stuff for 3 years, as I said, and then this book gives a questionnaire at the back which says if you can answer these 12 questions in the affirmative, then you're probably an ET wanderer. And this questionnaire was the most precise, psychologically invasive assessment of my real personality, even to stuff that I didn't want to admit to myself, much less to another human being. And here it is in black and white in paper on a book that I just picked up in the bookstore. So it blew my doors off. And I, you know, when he subtitled his book, The Subculture of Those Who Claim to Be of Non-Earthly Origins, I just literally laughed out loud in the middle of Barnes & Noble. I couldn't believe it, that he would even say that. But that's what's going on. I've become convinced that this is what we're dealing with here.
Right. Now, we were having trouble in this third cycle, as you mentioned. So 100 million souls came forward to kind of help us make this transition, correct, from the third density to the fourth
density? That's correct. And what they do, essentially, this is a very important point. Normally, if one of these entities were to incarnate on a typical third-dimensional planet like ours, they would literally be like a messianic figure for those people. They would have enormous influence politically, socially, technologically, etc. On this planet, there's hundreds of millions of us, or at least 100 million. So what that means is that a lot of us will have sort of pseudo-messianic thinking in our mind. You see many cases, if you look on blogs and so forth on the Internet and metaphysics, of people who find a little grain of truth and then feel that they have a unique role to save the world, and they create a movie where they're the hero. And I don't ascribe any significance to that belief. I think we're involved in a great team effort at this time. And each person has a unique and valuable contribution. That being said, there's a wonderful quote from, I believe it's St. Francis, in which he says that one moment of pure consciousness is worth more than a lifetime of good deeds. And what he means by pure consciousness is making a direct gateway to the divine within yourself. So this is the field effect we were talking about before. The fact is these wanderers are here because they have a higher frequency. And if you can simply remain in a state of peace and positive attitude and love and radiant joy, then you are fulfilling your job on the planet. There's no other actual expectation that you have to fulfill.
You're uplifting just by your energy.
Yeah. I mean, you want to keep your physical body safe and healthy.
Mm-hmm.
But that means you have to have a job and you have to do things to earn money and to take care of yourself. But as far as as long as you can maintain your positive frequency, everything else is secondary to that.
Okay, so let's go back to 1936. You feel that was a very important year and that started the shift. Talk about what happened during that year, 1936.
Well, this is another one of these interesting convergences between the Edgar Cayce material and the Law of One series. Now, I lived with Carla Ruckert for almost 2 years. She's the one who actually channeled the material along with two others, Dr. Don Elkins and Jim McCarty. And so in the course of living with Carla, I became aware of the fact that she had not really studied the Edgar Cayce readings at all. She was unaware that the Cayce readings had said anything about 1936. She was also unaware that the Cayce readings had said anything about Ra-Ta and suggestions about the group Ra. So there's all these interconnections between Law of One material and Cayce material that I've essentially discovered on my own, other people have discovered, and that's what our book, Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, goes into, is all these amazing connections.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Cayce readings said that in 1936 it would be a cataclysmic shift inside the Earth, and that it was caused by the arrival of outside cosmic forces and how they would impact the Earth. Well then, I mean, it was only a year ago that I'm going back through the Law of One series again, and it said something about a particular date where the readings were being channeled, and then it said a certain number of years before that, something happened, and you entered an energy field and affected the Earth. And I actually started sweating, and my heart started beating, and I realized, once I do this math, if it's 1936, it's going to blow my doors off. So sure enough, I added it up with my hand shaking on the calculator, and bam, it was 1936, and I'm like, oh, my God.
Wow.
So what that means is that these two sources in which the woman channeling it had no idea that this connection existed say the same thing. The Law of One series went into a lot more detail about it. Apparently, in 1936, we breached the outer edge of this galactic energy field, this band of energy, if you will, which kind of, these bands are kind of like shaped like pinwheels coming out from the galactic center out to the outside edge of the galaxy. It's not like rings. So as we hit this this wave, thoughts start to become things. And one of the things that the Law of One said would happen as a result of this was the manifestation of cancerous growth of tissue, which literally represents people's thoughts, in this case anger and negative emotion, manifesting as the anomalous growth of tissue.
So an epidemic of cancer resulted.
Right. But on the positive side, we had enormous explosions of technological growth, as well as the explosions of intelligence of the average person. This has been ongoing. If you look at our history, we didn't even have closed stoves up until the late 1700s. Benjamin Franklin actually invented that. So we were cooking over open fire up until the late 1700s. When you start thinking about how quickly in the late 1800s that all of a sudden we had electricity, we got lights, we got telephones, we got, in a short time, washing machines, all of these domestic responsibilities that used to involve a whole day's work every day suddenly became automated, as well as all the need for farm labor and roughing it out there in society was no longer required, and you could have a job that didn't require you to do any real physical effort. So originally this was meant to be a positive thing. The higher beings have sort of guided our evolution and guided certain visionary people like Alexander Graham Bell, Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, Albert Einstein. All of these people have been either knowingly or unknowingly helped along by these higher positive beings who are helping steer our evolution so that we're on this timeline that culminates in 2012. So what we're dealing with now is a system where this consciousness changed in 1936 in a very fundamental way, and one of the things that started to happen was that our collective shadow began projecting itself into the government much more than ever before, and the first iteration of that was obviously Nazi Germany, which began rising in 1936. So it's an amazing correlation of how all this stuff fits together.
And that was the growth of our secret governments in the
40s,
50s, and all of the black agencies that we don't even know what they do all occurred.
Yeah, somebody could argue the precedent was set with the Federal Reserve in the 1913, but as far as what you're saying, yes, the OSS and then the CIA and all the other alphabet soup agencies have all come after this.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So let's get into... You have a new movie called Convergence. Why don't you talk about that and the theme of this new movie?
Well, I gave a lecture in L.A. in 2005, and there was a L.A. film producer there, and he walks up to me at the end of the show. I didn't even know he was in the audience, and his mouth had been hanging open the whole time I was lecturing, and he said, if we took everything you just said and put it into a film, it would be absolutely amazing. So I was, of course, very enthralled by this because it's a wonderful way to get a message out to people, and we began working together. A year after that initial meeting, we had enough financing to be able to get me out here to L.A., which is where I live now. It started out as a documentary, similar to What the Bleep, let's say, but with much more high-octane science than Bleep, which was actually mostly stuff that was in Gary Zukav's 1977 book, Dancing Wu Lee Masters, dealing with Heisenberg's uncertainty principle and the idea that wave-particle duality in quantum physics is a representation of the ephemeral nature of reality. But my science goes much more into depth of this consciousness field than they went into in Bleep, and it becomes a lot more evident. So what I had to do at first was to sequester a lot of the science that I'd put together that was the most advanced material, because there's this principle that the lawyers will tell you when you're doing a film in which you don't want to spoil the buzz before the film comes out. But what's since happened is that the film has been through many evolutions. We've had 5 completely different rewrites. We're in number 5 now. And the last 3 rewrites have all been dramatic adaptations where we're taking the scientific material and turning it into sort of a Da Vinci Code-style mystery thriller with science fiction elements.
Absolutely.
So, and we're working with top people in the field. We have the head of the LA Film School working with us, which was a great victory to get him involved. And I've actually had to get directly involved in the screenwriting. And the reason for that is, first of all, we basically don't have the money at this point to pay an A-list screenwriter. You're talking about $300,000, $500,000, even more to get a really good screenwriter. So what we're doing is we're working with people who are willing to go pro bono, and I've had to get directly involved in learning all the intricacies of screenwriting, and I've been doing an enormous amount of research. I've been reading scripts and reading. I've read 5 different books in the last 3 months on screenwriting. And what we're really trying to do is to figure out how to weave this information into a very compelling, enthralling story. The problem with that is that...
Blow the roof off the screen when it comes out.
Well, yeah, the problem is this. Scientific material in and of itself, in film terms, would be considered exposition. And exposition is like the wicked stepchild of film. It's usually crammed into a few little lines of expository dialogue that one or two characters give off over the course of a film, and that's it. And then the whole rest of the film is what we call gun and run, right? People holding a gun, running around, shooting each other. So we don't want a gun and run film. We want as much exposition as possible, but the thing about film is you have to create a mounting sense of jeopardy. And so one of the techniques in order to squeeze in exposition is if you can have two characters arguing with each other, and the exposition comes out in the course of their argument. So I've learned an enormous amount, and as a result, a lot of the thrill of watching a film has been taken from me because I know all the tricks now. But at the same time, I'm learning how to use those tricks in order to tell a really great story.
Right. Let me get back to the Mayan calendar here. I want to talk about what do you feel is actually going to happen in 2012? Do you feel there's going to be a pole shift and some catastrophes, and that will lead to a more gentle, healing, fourth-dimensional life? Or what's the process of what you feel is going to happen?
Well, this is another really fascinating aspect of the Law of One material that reconciles so much of why people would not need to feel afraid. There is such an overtone of earth change hysteria in most metaphysics, and actually Edgar Cayce himself contributed to that with his material regarding 1998 and California sinking into the ocean. Well, we're still here, nothing happened. Apparently, Cayce was distraught by people criticizing his work, and as a result of that, his negativity opened the door for what they called a trickster entity named Hallelujah to actually get in the way and interrupt his readings with negatively tainted information. That's where the earth change stuff came out. So ask any person deeply ensconced in the Edgar Cayce Association, and they will tell you that other readings after the Hallelujah readings basically repudiated Hallelujah and that whole body of information as incorrect and inaccurate. Now, the Law of One series says that the earth changes are something we shouldn't even spend a minute worrying about. It's like totally transient. It's of no importance. And the reason why is this. They're actually describing a frequency shift akin to a Bermuda Triangle effect that sort of engulfs the whole earth simultaneously in a dimensional shifting type of field. Now, the Philadelphia experiment and various other things have shown us that there is possibility for Stargate-type phenomena to occur, and I've spoken to people who have firsthand knowledge of the Philadelphia experiment, so I know that that's not a fabricated story. And, of course, there's many, many accounts of ships and airplanes and all sorts of craft disappearing in the Devil's Triangle near Japan and the Bermuda Triangle and various other locations on the Earth's surface. Ivan Sanderson calculated that there's 12 locations, and they're all equally distant from each other, which forms the nodes of a geometry called an icosahedron. So in effect, we're dealing with a global grid where the nodes on this grid, the geometric grid, the nodes are where the real action is happening, where these Bermuda Triangle effects occur. In 2012, the grid shifts into a higher frequency. When you crank up the frequency, the geometry itself changes, and there's a lot of articles on my site that go into detail about that. So that's where the pole shift happens, is the grid actually becomes more complex. It affects the positions of the continents, it affects the size of the Earth, and it affects the Earth's rotational axis. However, before the Earth actually physically shifts, everyone on Earth, regardless of whether they're positive, negative, or indifferent, is going to transition into a higher plane. And this is an astral plane. Now, it's become clear through... The thing is that the Law of One series didn't just hand it to you on a silver platter. It's taken us over 20 years of researching this material to understand what it was actually telling us. And we finally decoded the mystery last year in San Francisco at an IONS conference. Myself and Dr. Scott Manilker, who I mentioned earlier, we worked on this together and figured it out. That what the Law of One is actually telling us is that in the period of 2011 to 2013, everyone on Earth flips over into this astral plane, whereupon the majority of them will immediately reload the Earth exactly as it was in their memory before anything happened. They will not experience Earth changes. They will not see tidal waves or earthquakes. And in fact, you're basically an indestructible body in the astral plane, so their lifespan might actually end up being a lot longer than it would have been if they had continued to live in the normal Earth. Now, the astral will never have been like this before. This is a fundamental restructuring of the whole nature of the astral plane as we understand it, because the whole Earth is basically being reloaded into the astral as we remember it. Some people, on the other hand, who are practicing the positive path, are going to experience this ascension event, in which it's the most ecstatic merger with your higher self that you'll ever experience in any lifetime. It's a complete homecoming. It's like everything that you've ever worked for, and all the sacrifice, and all the struggle, and all the tears, and all the pain, suddenly comes to an omega point, a quantum shift, where you come into direct contact with a representation of God that's the most inspiring to you that it ever could be. And you actually experience a review of not just this life, but all of your past lives. And it essentially moves you through this multi-incarnational review to get you down to an exact level of how much progress you've made. Now, when I say this to people, they freak out, and they're like, oh my gosh, that means that if I haven't progressed, then I might, you know, fail somehow. And what we tell them is, look, you know, we, meaning myself and the higher forces, we say, look, you know, you have the power to change your life right now. So this Earth is moving into a higher plane in which unconditional love is the law of the land. There's not going to be Illuminati on the planet anymore. The only planet level in which negatives and positives co-interact on the same planet is our level now. As soon as you break out of this level, they're segregated. And it's basically segregation by vibration. So it's not like it's a racist thing. It's just the frequencies don't interrelate anymore. So the Earth is essentially moving into sort of an Edenic paradise, sort of a utopia. And we have the power to control how quickly and how expediently we move through that by the diligence that we have in our own personal growth. So how this relates...
amazing, exciting adventure coming up for all.
Absolutely.
It's interesting that the fundamental Christians are anticipating this as well. They're anticipating kind of a cataclysm and then this millennium, this time of peace.
Well, now I'm saying again that the cataclysmic activity is something that occurs under the radar where people have shifted to a level where they don't experience it directly. But yeah, I mean, you have to remember now, there are too many intersecting historical validations of the life of the man Jesus for it to be discounted. Now, there are some Illuminati out there who have put out various books or who have influenced and paid people to put out books where they try to refute the whole story of Jesus and say, well, he's just a mythological archetype and, you know, nobody really existed who did this stuff. And I beg to differ. You know, I think that in order for people to have gotten that jazzed up about something, that there very much was a guy walking around and doing ascended things.
Oh, I agree with you, yeah. Sure, a carpenter who only traveled a few miles in his whole life, absolutely, yeah.
Right, so, well, that might not be true either. The Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ was validated by Edgar Cayce, and that says that he actually went to the pyramid. Right, he traveled east and he went into the pyramid, experienced his ascension in the pyramid, and that's how he ended up having the most powerful abilities was a result of going through that with the Egyptian...
Yeah, I'd like to touch on what you feel the purpose of the pyramids were and how they were built.
Okay, well, let's carry that narrative a little bit farther, and then I'll tie it into that. So the real point of why I brought up Jesus was this. If this man is saying that this end times formula is going to happen, including things like in the book of Daniel, two shall be walking and then there shall be one, I have reason to believe that there's some truth in that. And most people are just so ensconced in materiality that they can't accept that that could happen. Fundamentalist Christians do, but then they bastardize it into saying that their dogma is the only way in which you can approach that knowledge and have it actually be valid. Whereas the visions that I've had show all sorts of different races and religions being able to inherit this fourth dimensional Earth because it's really about the frequency that you hold. So getting back to your question about the pyramid, here's the segue. The Earth itself is a source of energy that radiates which the Russians refer to as torsion fields. It's a natural source that comes, as I said before, from the Earth, from the Sun, from the center of the galaxy, which again is why when you're aligned with the center of the galaxy at 14 hours, 30 minutes sidereal time, that your ESP goes up 400%. Well, the Earth is giving off an energy field like that as well. This energy field is actually what fuels physical matter to sustain its own existence. So each little atom and molecule is like a sponge that takes in this energy like a fluid and then extracts it back out again. So when you build a structure that's in the shape of a tower or a cylinder or a cone or a pyramid, you're actually building a funnel. And the actual physical matter will have a liquid-like effect in terms of the energy that makes it. Now, this is the thing that our quantum physicists have not fully understood, is the fact that there is a substrate of energy that actually is fluid-like in its behavior. But it's fluid-like in a dimension that's outside of our measurable frequency. So it's a hyperdimensional energy. This fluid-like energy is what makes matter, and you can actually concentrate it and focalize it. And when you do that, like in the middle of a pyramid, you get things like razor blades sharpening in the pyramid, which is the molecular realignment of the razor blade. You get things like the stopping of disease bacteria so that, like, you can put milk in there and it won't rot. The Russians have done some amazing research where they built pyramids out of PVC pipe and fiberglass and then built these things like 144 feet tall, very steep pyramids, almost like obelisks. And they did things like putting mice inside the pyramid that had been tainted with typhoid fever or with cancer, and they don't develop tumors and they don't get sick. They've actually taken water and put it in the pyramid and then fed it to premature babies, and the babies who are fed the water have an almost complete restoration of their normal health. So we're talking about miracle-level healing changes. And in terms of another study, they took salt and pepper and put it in the pyramid and then distributed it to these prisoners in selected jails in Russia. And those prisoners, with no other change in their diet or their treatment plan or anything, suddenly experienced noticeable increases in their level of harmony, cooperation, and drug rehabilitation. So
right.
This is all stuff.
Yeah, a lot of people are putting copper pyramids in their house, actually, in their environment, too.
Yeah, the thing is that you either want to build it with all metal or no metal. Wood is a good material to use. You know, copper is good. You can buy a crystal pyramid if you want to. And again, another thing you have to keep in mind is that when you're dealing with torsion fields, you're dealing with something that has a physical effect, and so you want to not overuse it. If you overuse it, you can have actually a deleterious effect. And this also gets back into global warming and interplanetary climate change. I don't know if you want to get into that, but
Actually, we're winding down. But I do want to get into your Science of Peace. You have a CD series with some really great jazz and trance music, and where you talk about all of these concepts, actually, set to music.
Right. And we have that clip. Did you want to play that clip now, or?
I want people to go to your website, actually, and find out all the information about you. It's divinecosmos.com, and I really appreciate you being on the show. It's a lot of information, so I just would want to direct people to your site to read the articles and check out all this info. So thank you for coming on the show, David Wilcock at divinecosmos.com.
Very good.
Thanks a lot. Good night, David.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So really a fascinating interview, and once again, he is the author of The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, and please check out all of his material. It's really way too much, of course, to discuss in this short time, but I did want to hit the highlights of all his varied aspects of research. So in the last few minutes or so, I want to talk about what's going on in the news. Just remind you a bit about myself. I'm your host, Mike Schultz, and I produced a few DVDs myself on ancient mysteries. If you have any interest in Easter Island and Stonehenge and the pyramids, please check out my first DVD, The Sands of Time, and my second one, The Temples of Stone, and that's available at fountainsofuse.net. Or just click on Odyssey on the main website, and that will take you to my website. You can see a picture of me and my DVDs, and we cover some of this material as well, talking about the pyramids. So in the news lately, tonight, I'd actually like to talk about two real patriots who are going up against the machine. And we talked about the big machine in the United States, this kind of industrial military complex that the media never talks about, but it's the big giant machine in the room. And the first person is Cindy Sheehan. She lost her son in the war, and she became a crusader and an activist against the war in Iraq. And just within the past few weeks, she's really come up against the machine. She had really put her faith in the Democratic Party, and she was very excited when they won control of the House and the Senate last year. And she thought for sure, certainly, that they would stop the war. They would stop the funding. Because after all, we're told over and over, it's the Democrats against the Republicans. It's one against the other. And one side is anti-war and one side is pro-war. We're given this simplistic paradigm. So she was shocked after the Democrats gained control of the House and Senate that they funded the war again. They handed over all the money to the president to continue this war. And she disassociated herself with the party. She has seen the light that it really is one party with two wings. And she is now running for Congress in San Francisco against Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House. So good for her. And she's on a third party or independent ticket, which, of course, is really the way to go to really break up this dynasty or this monopoly. So once again, we're taught over and over again that there's this huge discrepancy between Democrats and Republicans. But boy, when there's a big issue like going to war, they certainly come together and are on the same page and funding the military-industrial complex. The other patriot I want to talk about is Ron Paul. He's from Texas. He's a congressman, and he's running for president. And it's going to be really interesting to follow him and how the media covers him, because he's hugely popular on the Internet, and he's hugely popular with the public. He's talking about, you know, dismantling complex government, making it more simple, going back to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights and a very skeletal system, and giving people their freedoms and their liberties. And he's the only candidate really doing that, and he's gaining traction. So Ron Paul, once again from Texas, even though he's running on the Republican ticket, he's really more of a libertarian, which is actually the party he used to belong to. So it's going to be interesting to see how far he gets and if the machine shuts him down or if the people rise up and say, well, no, we really want to change this time. We really want an alternative. And let's see what kind of traction he gets in the polls and if the media even covers him or his campaign. He's starting to appear on some kind of populist talk shows like Bill Maher and Jon Stewart and things like that. So, you know, like I said, he's all over the Internet, and we'll see what kind of traction he does get. So these are, you know, two patriots that are shaking things up, Cindy Sheehan and Ron Paul, and they've been on the news all this week. So once again, the paradigm is not really, as I see it, the paradigm is not really Republican versus Democrat. It's patriot. If you're a person who wants to keep the United States an independent, sovereign nation with secure borders and trade agreements that protect us, or you're a globalist and you want to merge in with all the countries of the world and create this giant kind of conglomerate government, kind of a United Nations-style government, that's really the paradigm. That's really the choice. You're either a patriot, and once again, you want the U.S. to remain independent, or you want us to just merge first with Mexico and Canada into a North American Union and then merge into a giant global government. So that's the choice. That's the paradigm. And like I said, there's some other alternative political parties cropping up, like the Constitution Party, the American First Party, and the Libertarian Party. And there's all kinds of alternatives out there. So you know, that's a lot of what's going on in the news. So I'll wind up talking a little bit about my second DVD called The Temples of Stone. I wrote an article on Gnosticism, and that's a powerful faith that cropped up initially after the time of Jesus, and then it was kind of stamped out by the church. So let me read you this article, and then I'll make a few comments, and we'll wind up. So the article is titled The Lost Religion Known as Gnosticism. A powerful faith developed in the first 3 centuries A.D. that was known as Gnosticism. It teaches a different type of Christianity than that of the Roman Church, which led to its banishment and the destruction of most Gnostic texts and documents by the time of the Council of Nicaea in 325 A.D. And by the way, this council is when a lot of our documents were thrown out, actually, and that's when the final draft of the Bible was put in place. So since there were many of the original followers of Jesus and their movement that sprang up so quickly after the time of Christ, there is intense interest today in the beliefs of the long-forgotten faith of Gnosticism. The fictional book Da Vinci Code touches on these themes and has inspired much investigation into the past. People are curious why the official church went to so much trouble to stamp out Gnosticism. Okay, well, actually we're winding down. We don't have too much more time. So anyway, I was talking about Gnosticism, and this is in my second DVD called The Temples of Stone. And I'm going to get back to that in the last few minutes. So in 1945, there were two peasants in Egypt who found an ancient manuscript known as the Nag Hammadi. These documents contained fragments of the Gnostic writings that had been banned so long ago, and included the Gospel of Thomas, a brief 12-page account of the teachings of Christ. Many scholars believe it was written even before Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which date from 70 AD to 100 AD. According to Thomas, Jesus makes no particular claim toward divinity. At one point, Jesus cautions the disciples not to even refer to him as teacher. Thomas doesn't write of sin and repentance, but speaks of the Gnostic goal of enlightenment. These teachings did not go along with the official church dogma, which most probably explains the banishment of the Book of Thomas until it was rediscovered in 1945. The Greek philosopher Plato had an influence on Gnostic thought, according to researcher Richard Smalley. He wrote a work called Timaeus, which refers to the existence of the lost continent of Atlantis, which he says was destroyed around 10,000 BC. He relates a philosophy that there is no one divine, benevolent God who created the universe. This God created lower gods or entities, which created our planet. This is more or less the belief that the Gnostics adopted. They believe that Jehovah of the Old Testament was one of these lower gods. This is important because it's the exact same theory that I uncovered while researching the ancient astronaut theory in my first DVD, The Sands of Time. Just to connect one more piece of this puzzle, we talked about the ancient god Thoth, who wrote the Emerald Tablet. He also authored a hermetic work called the Pauman Res, which surfaced in Europe in the 15th century. Thoth writes of a similar story that Plato and the Gnostics put forth about our creation. He states that the God of the universe commissioned a craftsman, or lower type of God, to create this world, and this lower God created man in his own image. This is on par with the story told in the Sumerian clay tablets that I researched while studying the ancient astronaut theory. The Gnostics also believed in the presence of evil, or oppositional entities, called archons, who vied for the control of this earth. Once again, these archons bear a striking resemblance to the lower gods and demigods who tried to control humans during the height of ancient civilization. One of the great Gnostic teachers, Marcion, created a Bible that didn't even include Jehovah and the Old Testament. This stripped-down version focused on the New Testament Gospels and the writings of Paul. So this created another giant conflict with the official Roman Church during the first three centuries after Christ. So that's just a taste of the article I wrote about Gnosticism, and you can find this information in my latest DVD titled The Temples of Stone. Please check it out. Go to the main webpage, click on My Show Odyssey, and that will take you to my website, and you can check out those two DVDs. So I'm sorry about that confusion. There was a caller that came on and was referring to an appearance I made on Art Bell, but I actually have not been on that radio network, so there may have been confusion with another host, and I apologize for that interruption. Anyway, it was a very full, exciting show talking to David Wilcock. Very provocative thoughts and ideas. He's at divinecosmos.com. And I look forward to bringing you lots of exciting information in the weeks to come, every Monday, 8 p.m. And please check out my archives. I have about 30 great shows there. You can click them on for free and listen every time. So thanks for joining me on Odyssey Radio. I'll talk to you next week, and take care, everybody. Good night.